Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, Thorn in the Side, Thursday, the 27th of December, 2012. On the way out the door with the old year and on the way in with the new, right? Yeah, except for the fact that it's all just loaded of crap. It's the arbitrariness of New Year's Day is equal or exceeded only by the arbitrariness of Christmas Day. Maybe, I don't know, New Year's Day actually exceeds that. Freezing. Why couldn't we? I don't know. I like to tilt at windmills. I want to go back to a New Year's Day that makes some sense, like the first day of spring. Call that January 1st. Or April 1st. I don't care. But there's a reason why September is September and October is October. We still use the names, just not the order of things. September was the seventh month in a Roman calendar. October was the eighth month. November was the ninth. December was the tenth. January was the 11th. And February was the 12th. The Romans liked to start their new year off right, so they started with March the 1st, named for, of course, the god of war. Because that's when you could really get serious about thinking about getting back into the battlefield. Really. But no, the New Year's on the way out, and this is, I wanted to make sure that I made this little announcement here, and you other folks can remind me along the way if you've got questions or anything like that. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, a little internet broadcasting enterprise that is available in a wide variety of formats and platforms, including the aforementioned URL, plus portable platforms like the TuneIn Radio app for your smartphone, or the Stitcher Radio app for your smartphone, or the Tuner Internet Radio app for your smartphone, and places like Streama.com, Dardef.fm. Podcasting address is available under the subdomain for this program at WhiteRoseSociety.org, and you can also get the podcast at iTunes. What could be more current to rail at as far as tilting at windmills is concerned than the new year? Betsy. I mean, it's right on top of us, right? But no, a little announcement. New Year's Eve, which is Monday. A, there will be a show. B, we're going to try to expand on what we did election night. In other words, there's going to be a giant Skype chat. The Horn Malloy Skype group that, for instance, provided the challenge to meet last night's fundraising goal, we're going to gather everybody together and see if we can just have a great big New Year's Eve celebration. And, of course, depending on whether some folks maybe from what used to be referred to as the Far East chime in, I don't know, Japan, Taiwan, Australia, what have you, then it'll already be New Year's Day, and won't that be cool? So that's coming up. the Skype Horn Malloy chat is a heck of a lot of fun. And I thought we had pretty good audio for it on New Year's Eve, and that's kind of what inspired me to think that maybe we ought to have a go at it. I mean, I'm sorry, it was pretty good election night, and that's why I thought New Year's Eve would be a good time to try it again. And if it works better and better and better, then maybe we'll try it more and more and more often. Okay? This is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and yes, we did meet our fundraising goal last night, which leaves us to meet a fundraising goal tonight and tomorrow night. We try to raise about $150 a night. That's 15 at 10, 10 at 15, 2 at 75, 3 at 50, 6 at 25. Yeah. But the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and you can jump right in and contribute that way if you feel so inclined. It is how this all keeps going. And just exactly what is this? Well, this is conversation radio. This is an attempt to do long-form, long-style dialogue that doesn't involve running people off the minute they take their first pause or breath. I think we came to this sort of naturally because I take pauses you can drive tanks through. There's one now. And so I think we understand that we're never going to come to any solutions if it's all about getting 5, 10, 15, 30 words in and then being told, "That's enough about you, let's talk about me." Yeah, he's out there, by the way. The porcine one, yes. And I just share this with you because it's a good indication of everything that I think is wrong with the medium. Yeah. This comes from a few days back because I guess he's down in the Dominican Republic chasing little boys or something. But Flush Flemball has never been one to hide from his own self-declared, self-perceived greatness. You'll see what I mean. Maybe. One of these days. Cycle. There it is.
Okay, we're going to start in Augusta, Georgia with Ben. Thank you for calling, sir. Great to have you. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much, Rush. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Good to talk to you. I just wanted to tell you Merry Christmas, and I hope you have a great holiday.
Thank you very much. You too, sir.
You too, sir.
What I wanted to tell you is...
Rush has been into the eggnog, hasn't he?
A few years ago, when I was in college, everything was great. I didn't have a job, and I wasn't paying taxes, grants, and you know, I did take out student loans to pay.
Grants? Government grants?
My parents were giving me money. Life was great. Moved away from home, and I started listening to your show about 2 or 3 months before this last election. And I'd heard your show before, and to be quite honest with you, and I apologize for being a little uncouth here, but I always thought you were just a blowhard that liked to hear yourself talk.
Well, I do. if you were right as often as I am, you'd like it to... See, I'm sorry, that makes 24-year-old women nervous. That's threatening. I take that back. Thank you, sir, very much. I appreciate that. Why did you think I was a blowhard?
Well, just from everything that I'd heard from people, you know, Rush Limbaugh, he just likes to hear himself talk. He has such far-fetched ideas about the way the world works and the way the country is, and he's just crazy.
Did you ever hear anybody say Bill Clinton likes to hear himself talk? Does anybody say that about him?
You get the idea. Once again, a clip pulled by some enterprising intern over at MediaMatters.org. If you were right as often as I am, you'd like to hear yourself talk, too. Yeah, okay. That's the kind of thing that you can expect from the buy gold now, buy vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls that you've grown hair on with some herbal concoction off a mattress made in Sweden by some process that was first evolved by NASA radio. And we don't do that here. No, we don't. And so, well, I say this because I've been getting more and more calls lately, and they generally happen at all hours of the day and night, from folks who are just finding the show. And almost without fail, well, I can say lately, no, without fail, they are calls that are exceedingly positive and hopeful and appreciative of the opportunity that people get to be heard here. And compared with that guy, no, we don't have millions of listeners. But we have a core group of incredibly intelligent people who want to live in a better place without having to move. Ron and Raleigh noted, chasing? Chasing? Rush is not doing a lot of chasing. He'd keel over. I'm sure he pays someone to do his chasing. Those little Latino boys are quick, which is why they're so good on the baseball diamond. Oh, baseball diamond. Okay. That's right. I guess Rush is a baseball fan. He once sold hot dogs for the Kansas City Royals or some such. Yeah. Okay, not chasing, Ron. How about trundling? Trundling. Galumphing? Galumphing after little boys in the Dominican Republic? Yeah. But that's not where Thorn in the Side Thursday is going to start. By the way, yes, Randy just reminded me, the widget for the PayPal widget for fundraising is in the shop. It went into the shop last night. So that'll get back sometime sooner rather than later. PayPal button still works, though. And we're still not at the month's fundraising goal. Now, a couple of different places to go. Starting out the program this evening, Thorn in the Side Thursday. We're back, and we had intimations of this with the presidential campaign when idiots of the right wing started babbling about Russia. But we're back. Oh, goodness me, we're back. Back to trying to gin up, I don't know, did we like the Cold War? Did we enjoy the Cold War? Because it certainly seems that way. If you were looking at the New York Times this morning, you may have noticed, and it's been all over the television all day today, too. You may have noticed that there is a little dust-up cooking between the U.S. and Russia. And my thought on that story, I don't think, as usual, is what most people would immediately reach for. Because there are a lot of people out there acting all, outraged, insulted even, about the fact that there is some brinksmanship being played between the diplomatically between the U.S. and Russia over the adoption of Russian children. It has to do with the fact that the U.S. passed and the U.S. Congress passed and the President signed into law something called the Magnitsky Act. It was signed into law earlier this month by the president. And it says that Russian citizens accused of violating human rights may not travel to the United States and may not own real estate or other assets in the United States. Now, President Obama signed it into law, even though it had opposed the legislation, because it sort of realized that there was going to be diplomatic retaliation from the Russians. But it did become law. Because there's some evidence out there of the kind of thing that the act proposes to ban happening. Because the Russian oligarchs are not known for their deep and abiding philanthropic humanity. They are, in many senses, throwbacks to a much older system. In response to the Magnitsky Act, the Russian government, which basically means the whim of Vladimir Putin, the Russian parliament passed at his encouragement, and he will sign, a law that says Russian children may no longer be adopted by American adoptive parents. And the issue of adoption is a painful one. And of course, you have a lot of adoptions are run through church agencies because they want the little heathens brought over here where they can be carefully raised and nurtured in a system of guaranteed religious bigotry of one form or another. But I got to thinking about that issue. If you were a country that considered itself civilized, and Russia certainly is, why would you allow anyone from the United States of America to ever adopt any of your children? In terms of adoptions, more Americans adopt Russian children than any other nationality in the world. Is that because they're white? I don't know. But this is a brutal country. I take no joy, I take no pride in saying that, but it is absolutely true. This is a country that does not have in place any means or method whereby we can state unequivocally to the world that every child in the United States even has access to de minimis degrees and levels of health care. This is a country in which the state in which a child resides largely determines that child's fate from a standpoint of not only health insurance, but of even of access to education. Children born in the Stan states, whether it be Appalachian, in other words, West Virginia Stan, Kentucky Stan, you know, Alabama Stan, Mississippi Stan, Arkansas Stan, Talibandiana, Oklahoma Stan. Children born in the Stan states, the old Confederacy in many parts except for Indiana, and some of the hardcore right-wing states of the West and Southwest, Texas, are born not just behind the eight ball, but back behind the whole rack And in order to succeed in life, we'll have to surmount obstacles children in more enlightened states will not face. Race still plays a monumental problem in whether a child will succeed or fail in an attempt to grow up in this country. So why would you allow, why would any country that thinks it has even the first modicum of enlightenment allow its children to be adopted into the United States of America, where that child might possibly die? Not from disease, but from lack of access to basic services. Well, child doctor visits. Oh, but Bob, what about SCHIP? You have to enroll in SCHIP. You can't just roll up to the door and have coverage. You don't just give the kid Social Security number. Oh, okay, covered, no problem. It doesn't work that way. I know this for a fact. I know this because our own teenage children are not covered. I know this because our grandchildren are not covered. Because we're all just way too wealthy, because we're not living under a cardboard refrigerator box over some sort of, you know, over under the bridge. Because that is the wealth standard that is used to calculate access in this country. Texas alone has uninsured children measuring in the millions. And so when I read this story, I thought, I'm not surprised. Mr. Putin also, this from the New York Times article, Mr. Putin, remember when George W. Bush said he looked into his eyes and saw his soul? Pootie Poot. Mr. Putin almost brushed aside, also, Mr. Putin, let's try this one more time, as a professional reader of the news. Mr. Putin also brushed aside criticism that the law would deny some Russian orphans the chance for a much better life in the United States. In 2011, about 1,000 Russian children were adopted to America, more than to any other foreign country, but still a tiny number, given that nearly 120,000 children in Russia are eligible for adoption. Now, I don't have the time or the data at hand to talk about why there are 120,000 children eligible for adoption in Russia. And I think we can say with some certainty that the 1,000 that do come over here, for the most part, are adopted by people with the means to do adoption. But having means at one time does not always mean you will always have the means at all times. And there is no safety net in the United States of America, none. And as we witness on the for-profit media day in and day out of late, the attempts to take away what little bit is left are relentless and remorseless and determined. There was a horror story, you may remember, from a couple of years back. You remember the Russian adoptee, the little boy whose Tennessee mother, Tennessee, got so fed up with him, she stuck him on a plane by himself and flew him back to Russia and washed her hands of him? Yeah. Vladimir Putin said there are probably many places in the world where living standards are better than ours. So what? Shall we send all children there or move there ourselves? Now, this man's a brute. Former KGB thug, there's no doubt about it. But he is not, unlike George W. Bush, his one-time soulmate, an idiot. And he's on to something. The solution is to make life better there, so that one does not have a generational brain drain. Because remember, the people who get so uptight about fetuses here in the United States, and they say things like, well, all them aborted babies, they might have one day cured the cancer. Well, the same thing may be said of some little Russian child who stays in Russia instead of coming over here to the brutal capitalist wonderland. So just a little something to pay attention to when you hear it pop up in the for-profit media and you see people talking with great indignation about why the little Russian babies can't be adopted over here to the United States to live in the free in the free market miracle of no freaking health insurance and dodgy schools and crumbling infrastructure. It's a little something to think about. The State Department spokesman Patrick Ventrell said today, we have repeatedly made clear, both in private and in public, our deep concerns about the bill passed by the Russian Parliament. Since 1992, American families have welcomed more than 60,000 Russian children into their homes, and it is misguided to link the fate of children to unrelated political consideration. And of course, there have been some adoptions that were previously cleared, good to go, ready, you know, buy the plane tickets, and they're now on hold. Without a doubt, it is a little bit sickening that the fate of children would be held in the balance against the fate of billionaire oligarchs who don't care anything about Russian children or American grown-ups or anybody but themselves. And yes, there is also a certain degree of bigotry involved because do we have any laws like that against thugs from the UK? I seem to recall a very wealthy Frenchman coming to the United States and getting into a little bit of a dust-up sexuel, if you will. I don't know if he owned anything here. Last I checked, there's a booming real estate market in South Florida with wealthy Brazilians buying... No, I'm not going to tell the George Bush Brazilians joke. Wealthy Brazilians buying up condos and what have you. And we certainly don't have any concerns about our own brutal oligarch plutocrat blood-soaked monsters buying everything up left and right in other countries. Well, that's their problem now, isn't it? So you can forgive the Russians for feeling a little bit put upon. But I don't. But I think adoptions coming from foreign countries into the U.S. are predicated on dreams for children of an America that no longer exists. you know, where everybody's got a fair shot, right? Yeah, no, that doesn't, that's not there anymore. So that one's just out there for your consideration. Note coming in from our Cassie. Yes, Bob, it is about Russian children being white. It's also about them being younger, Cassie says. How many adoptive U.S. parents would consider adopting U.S. children from foster care or becoming foster parents to children who are darker or older than babies or who have gotten into trouble? Let's take care of American children first, even the ones who aren't little, cute, white infants. Because there really are American children out there desperately in need of love. You know, post-born children, not fetuses. There are millions, if not tens of millions, or hundreds of millions, or billions of dollars that the religion industry pours every year into making sure that women that they get their clutches on, or get into their clutches, get their claws on, have the baby. And then they help them put it up for adoption. Bless Jesus. But they don't spend half, they don't spend a tenth of those resources on trying to find people who will promise to love forever, unconditionally, a 10-year-old. Or a 6-year-old. Even 4-year-olds aren't as attractive as getting a brand spanking, well, not spank, well, spoil the rod, a new baby. A new baby! So just try to think a little bit, if you don't mind. I mean, and I'm not saying you mind thinking. But when you see this thing pop up periodically, this story, with some indignant somebody speaking earnestly and indignantly into the camera, just take a minute and think about the America that really exists. Not the America that, what do you call it, the comic book America? The TV America? Where every problem can be solved by minute 29, right before the credits roll. Now, I know it has happened from time to time, so I ask the question under advisement, but when is the last time that a disaffected male, you know, not the member of some ethnic group that feels like it's being, you know, that is really being persecuted or anything like that, when's the last time that a disaffected male, armed to the teeth, walked in and blew away a bunch of children in Russia? And understand that I accepted out of that calculation terrorism born of sectarian or nationalist or revolutionary or separatist violence. Now, I'm not talking about... No, when's the last time some guy whose mother was pulling down $250,000 a year and talking about the end of the world until she became unbearable even to the folks down to the corner tavern? When's the last time... the boy... when's the last time Newtown happened in Russia? Now, there is a robust and vibrant underground organized crime operation in Russia, no doubt. And there are certainly lots of guns in Russia. But not nearly to the factor nor degree that they are here. What guarantee could the United States or any adoption agency offer to the Russian government that one of these little babies wouldn't in 5 or 6 years, or 7 or 10 or 12 or 20, be carried out with a sheet over its face from the sight of some godforsaken another day in America massacre? Precisely none. And that was one of the horrors of Sandy Hook. A little boy whose parents had come to the land of the free and the home of the brave from that tyrannical dictatorship, the United Kingdom. Who got up one Friday morning and got dressed and went smiling off to school and came home, thanks in large part to the National Republican Rifle Association. Well, he didn't come home. He went to the morgue with a sheet over his face. He did not die for freedom. He did not die for liberty. He died for the enduring profit margins of the arms manufacturers. So just keep that stuff in mind, if you don't mind, when you hear the earnest indignation over the so-called adoption story. Jack in Shreveport just sent this along under the subject line, child poverty. He says, I looked up a factoid about child poverty from an article dated August 2012. How much child poverty are we living with? A study this year by UNICEF found a U.S. child poverty rate of 23.1%, way beyond any other economically advanced nation except Romania. In Spain, which is in a depression, the figure was 17.1%. In Canada, it was 13.3%. In Finland, where among other things, teachers earn more than just about any other place on the planet, in Finland, the child poverty rate is 5.3%. It is our country, a brutal place. That's not unpatriotic. That is merely a reflection of reality. And we don't have time here for bromides and fantasies about what we're not. There are lots of such stories and stories related to that kind of concept out there. Things that bear remembering. Things like what happens to a person with a felony drug conviction in this country. A story by Tiffany Willis, published over at addictinginfo.org. Have a felony drug conviction? No food for you. It should actually be titled. It would probably take up more space. But have a felony drug conviction in the United States of America, the greatest nation that God has ever put on the planet Earth? Question mark. No food for you. I hope you know how galling these stories are to me. Because I remind you once again, Carol, who called in last night, is exactly 10 years older than I. And he was talking about the world that he was raised in. It may seem strange to you, but in the course and scope of any given day, I spend a lot of time thinking about what has gone on in the conversation of the night before. And so I realized that, yeah, I think I grew up pretty much in that same world, or the tail end of it, that Carol was describing. And there was a whole lot of very sincere talk and teaching back then about how great this country is, or was, at the time. Now, growing up as I did in Alabama, and traveling up here for the first years of my life fairly frequently, there were undercurrents of other things that other folks could speak to with far more authenticity than I. But there really was evidence of decency on display. So stories like this, have a felony drug conviction in the greatest country that God ever let see dawn on the planet, on planet Earth? ? No food for you. Stories like this just absolutely bust me. And they bust me because they are factual. Tiffany Willis, writing this article at addictinginfo.org, says, on December 21st, 2012, Dr. Emily Wang, assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at the Yale School of Medicine and the associate director of the Transitions Clinic Network, posted a piece in the American Prospect about the plight of Carla, a convicted felon who had recently been released from prison. Carla showed up at Dr. Wang's office in tears. She had been doing well since her release from prison. She was drug-free, had regained custody of her children, and enrolled in a local community college. Things were looking great for Carla, so why was she upset? In spite of a diligent job search, her felony conviction has made it virtually impossible to find any entry-level job, and she can't feed her children because she has no money and is not eligible for food stamps. Is it because she's a felon? Not exactly. If Carla were a murderer or a rapist, she'd qualify for food stamps. But because she was convicted of possession of marijuana at the age of 20, she is ineligible for state assistance via the SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as food stamps, program. Now the numbers. 32 states ban people with drug felony convictions from receiving food stamps, SNAP. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says that 9 states have a lifetime ban for food stamp eligibility for drug felony convictions, and 23 states have a partial ban. Partial bans permit eligibility for people convicted of possession or who are enrolled in a drug treatment program. People who were convicted of selling drugs are completely ineligible. And by drugs, we also include, you know, pot. Carla is one of thousands of former convicted drug offenders who suffer because of a passage in the 1996, thank you very much, Clinton administration, Welfare Reform Act. The specific passage of the act was implemented to keep drug users from selling their food stamps for drug money. Because, you know, that's what those people do. It's like that. Or, and I've done seen it in the grocery store. Sometimes they take out a $20 food stamp to buy a 75-cent candy bar, and they get $19.75 back in cash money change. And you know where they went with that there cash money, right? But sometimes they could just trade their food stamps. And, well, we don't want to be enabling them, do we? That might as well be a transcript from the debate around this brutal, hateful, legislative, toxic mess. But the thing is, it's been rendered, as the article notes, irrelevant in the modern age. Because there are no more food stamps. There are no more little booklets of denominated currency that are mailed out once a month. $4 a day, don't eat it all in one place. No, we have EDT cards now. They're just like debit cards. And they're administered by the fine, upstanding people at J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America and God knows who else. And they are paid handsomely for doing so, for administering the programs. The actual monies that go into the SNAP program, part of them just goes straight to the bank. As an administrative fee, and I guess in the form of food, that people who like to eat food, you know, humans, never see. Tiffany Willis says, I suppose that technically Carla could buy prime rib and then sell it. What's the street value of prime rib? But that's unrealistic. I'm sure that it does happen, but most people use their food stamp funds to buy food for themselves and their families. She continues, people who are coming out of prison are vulnerable. It's extremely difficult to find employment with a felony conviction. Renting an apartment or home is challenging because many apartment complexes have policies against renting to felons, and some communities even passed laws that disallow landlords from renting to convicted felons. Many convicted felons lost everything when they were locked up, and while some have supportive families, the majority do not. The hotel room scene from the Shawshank Redemption comes to mind. That's America, where we begrudge people who fall afoul of some of the most inane, ignorant, and ill-informed drug laws on planet Earth are begrudged food here in this Christian nation. Tiffany Willis says, Dr. Wang has first-hand knowledge of the damaging consequences of the food stamp ban. Quote, as a doctor who cares predominantly for people who are released from prison, I see the damaging consequences of this ban on food stamps. I have seen patients of mine with diabetes go without food and end up hospitalized with low blood sugar, and still others with HIV skip their antiretrovirals because they don't have food to take with their pills. Not having access to food is associated with bad health outcomes, including worsening diabetes, HIV, depression. Young children face anemia, diabetes, and depression. Young children. Young American children. Young American children who probably would love to have a warm bed, a roof over their head, a nice home, and who knows, a parent or parents who love them. But I can't tell you how many times today I've seen mention of the Russian adoption ban story. It's really, really galling when you see someone with a great big old mote in their own eye trying to pluck the beam out of somebody else's. Ain't that America, home of the free? Ain't that America, baby, for you and me? But no, let's not think that there's something minimal about this. Well, yeah, I mean, but that's just a couple of people who get out of prison, Bob. I mean, that's not the whole country. I mean, you know, come on. There's plenty of people doing just fine here. Law-abiding, decent, upstanding people who, you know, go to church every time the doors are open and stuff. This story by Neil DeMoss was published yesterday at Slate. Georgia's Hunger Games, and Cassie reminds me, she says, with the story about the food stamp ban, she said, I sent you a story just like this about 3 years ago, and yes, I remember, because nothing has changed. Fewer than 4,000 adults in the state of Georgia receive welfare. Well, that means anybody needs it. Georgia, and this is one of those little questions you can win trivia contests with. What is the largest single state by land area east of the Mississippi River? 9 out of 10 people will say either New York or Pennsylvania, and you get to say, wrong! It's Georgia. Georgia. Georgia of the Deep South, Georgia of the Sun Belt, Georgia of the booming southern population. Georgia that will let its own people starve. There are fewer than 4,000 adults in Georgia receiving welfare, even as poverty is soaring. When the economy crashed in 2008, Neil DeMoss writes, millions of Americans lost their jobs. Applications for food stamps soared. So did attendance at emergency food providers, soup kitchens, and food pantries that helped the estimated 50 million people, working and non-working, who can't afford enough groceries to get through the month. 50 million people in the United States. That is 1/7 of the population. That is 14% of the population of the United States of America, the greatest country God ever let the sun shine on in the history of the world. Amen. Unlike in past economic downturns, though, the welfare rolls barely budged. Jesus, wait a minute. What happened? All those right-wing birther, deather, tenther, booger-eater, goober. Barack Obama's done become the welfare food stamp president. The welfare rolls barely budged. Where 15 years ago, 68% of poor Americans received cash via temporary assistance to needy families, TANF, today, only 27% of Americans with incomes low enough to qualify for cash benefits receive them. As the New York Times' Jason DeParle, excuse me, discussed in a front-page article earlier this year, the resulting welfare gap has left at least 4 million families with neither jobs nor cash aid. How do you live? guess you live on them George H.W. Bush 1,000 points a lot. I like my point a lot with lettuce and tomato, Heinz 57, and French fried potatoes. Big kosher pickle and a cold draft beer. Well, good Lord Almighty, way do I steep now. The size of the welfare gap, however, varies widely state to state. In states like California and Maine, which have focused on getting their poor citizens into job programs, about two-thirds of those eligible still receive welfare. On the opposite end of the spectrum is Georgia, which over the past decade has set itself up as the poster child for the ongoing war on welfare. Even as unemployment has soared to 9% and 300,000 Georgia families now live below the poverty line, 50% higher than in 2000 for a poverty rate that now ranks 6th in the nation, the number receiving cash benefits has all but evaporated. Only a little over 19,000 families receiving TANF remain, all but 3,400 of which were cases involving children only. That's less than 7%, making Georgia one of the toughest places in the nation to get welfare assistance. What's Georgia's secret? Neil DeMoss asks. According to government documents, interviews with poor Georgians, and those who work with them, it's a simple one. Combine an all-Republican state government out to make a name for itself as tough on freeloaders, a state welfare commissioner so zealous about slashing the rolls that workers say she handed out zero candy bars to emphasize her goal of zero welfare, and federal rules that, regardless of who's in the White House, give states the leeway to use 1996 law's requirement for work activities, the same provision that Republicans have charged President Obama wants to unfairly water down, to slam the door in the face of the state's neediest. Why don't you go die? Go on now. Get on out of here. You and your little ones just go crawl off in a corner and die somewhere. We don't need you. You ain't working. What good are you? Oh, don't tell me that BS about how your baby gonna grow up and cure cancer someday. Oh, that only happens with fetuses who don't get to grow up. Your little babies are gonna grow up and be on welfare just like you are. It's like that feller up in South Carolina said, if you feed them, they'll breed, and then you'll have to feed more. Real world. In a state of affairs that's left an increasing number of Georgians with nowhere to turn, Teresa, a single mom of a two-year-old living in a domestic violence shelter, tells of how she broke down and applied for cash benefits after fleeing an abusive relationship, only to be chastised by a state welfare officer who asked, "Wouldn't you rather work?" Eventually, Teresa says, "I was sitting there crying. I just didn't know what else to do. I said, you've gone from letting people sit on their butt and collect money to the very opposite of that." Dear God. And we're worried about whether we're going to let little Russian babies come here to America. Ron, you know what else, Bob? You can't vote either in many states. Taxation without representation, indeed. We in this country are at our core mean-spirited and hard-hearted. Can't vote, can't eat. Well, if you can't, you know, it's just like they said there on Beretta. If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. But in point of fact, what happens when the time's been done? Oh, I see. In the case of a young woman with a felony conviction for weed, her actual sentence never ends. The punishment goes on and on and on and on, so that we can look at ourselves and say, see, we're better than that. There, but for the grace of God, go we. Right? Betsy says, I think they actually want the felons to go off and die, and their kids with them. Yes, they do. Die and die quickly is not merely the right-wing Republican answer to health care. It's the right-wing Republican answer to everything. Dr. John with a question. He says, a Georgia correlation? So the state's a top example of the war on welfare and also a top example of right to work. Anybody else see a connection there? Yeah, what's it say in the book? Let those who have eyes to see, let them see. Let those who have ears to hear, let them hear. Of course there's a correlation. Of course there is. It's just America. And by the way, if you're out there and you're trying to keep track of what the latest terror tactics are, and these are terroristic acts, what the latest terror tactic is on the so-called fiscal cliff, well, can't go into detail. But I had reason to find out something today. It turns out, and understand, this is West Virginia. And if it's being bandied about in West Virginia, it's being bandied about in Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, Idaho. This stuff spreads fast. Because by the time it's gotten here, it really has to have gotten legs. We don't come up with a lot of this stuff. Well, none of these right-wing memes happen without help. And they don't just take root in a place like West Virginia. What, Bob? For God's sakes, what? The latest. You know, of course, that undereducated, low-information, Fox-watching America is already pretty well convinced that Obama is going to come and take their goons, right? You didn't get that memo? Oh, well, sorry. Yeah. Obama's going to get our guns, and they can have our guns, and they prime for our cold dead bangers. Yeah. But apparently, there has been so much pushback from the whole Sandy Hook Elementary waking nightmare that the going to get our guns hasn't got enough legs. So there's apparently been a new element added. And again, I'm literally hearing about this. I don't have a website to direct you to, but that's the way this stuff operates. I haven't found a link to it in, in Free Republic or anything, but there's just something somewhere. Because it probably spreads in church, frankly. Because that's where a lot of this stuff spreads. Obama ain't just going to get your guns. He's going to get your money, too. Because, see, it's because of the fiscal cliff. And pretend for a moment that you are not as well informed as you are. Pretend that you don't read as much and listen to as much. And try to digest as much as you do. Pretend for a moment that all in the world you want to do is get through your shift, get home, get a couple of Bush Lights down you, and maybe watch a little dancing with the Kardashians and go off to bed and get up and do it again. Amen, sweet Jesus. Pretend that's you. What would you think if somebody that you work with every day, that you trust, looked at you and said, "Well, you know, because of this here fiscal cliff, we ain't getting our tax refunds this year, don't you? Government's going to take our tax refund." And imagine for a moment that you, like ever so many Americans, count on being able to get that interest-free loan that you have given to the federal government every year for as long as you've been making money. Imagine you can't get it back this year. There's an entire marketing economy built up, not just by people like H&R Block, but there's an entire marketing economy built up around tax refund season. You'll see the ads soon. Back in my terrestrial radio days, the sales guys, you know, the Herb Tarlicks of the world with their spotted pants and their plaid jackets, or their plaid pants and their spotted jackets, told me that January and February were absolutely the worst months in radio sales. Because all the retailers knew that nobody was out there having to buy anything, because they were busy paying off Christmas. That they were tapped. Oh, but Lord, when income tax refund season comes in, they're ready for you. And so naturally, that's where the latest round of preying, of predatory parasitic conduct, has reared its head. Again, I reiterate, I cannot direct you to any right-wing website claiming this. But it's real. It's real. Anything possible to get us to give up what we have worked our asses off for, what we have busted our humps for. Because, you know, everybody has to sacrifice a little bit. We'll sacrifice the Social Security that we paid cash money for, and maybe the oligarchs and plutocrats who make in excess of $250,000 a year, maybe they'll sacrifice a little tiny dab of tax money that ain't going to add up to a hill of beans in the first place, because they're making all their money on capital gains anyhow. But then that Social Security money, it'll go into the stock market, and it'll sound so sweet falling in there. It'll sound like jingling. Oh, it'll be like jingling money in a one-armed bandit. Don't you know? So just a little food for thought. Start in one place and wind up in another. But it all links together, doesn't it? And again, I reckon ain't no non-welfare receiving poor folk in Georgia going to be, no, I mean our Georgia, not theirs, going to be trying to adopt any pretty little white Russian babies. right? Right. So, it's Thursday. Thorn in the Side Thursday. No green news report this evening from Brad and Desi, because I guess they're taking the interim between Christmas and New Year's off. Lord knows they deserve the break. God, they go at it. But we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. Lines are wide open. 304-658-3333 is the dial-in number. If we ever get financially ahead enough, I don't know, we'll try to get the toll-free number out of hock. But that's the direct dial number. It comes right in. Easy, easy, easy. 304-658-3333. Or you can get in on Skype. The Skype line is hot, ready to go, one call at a time. The handle here, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, H-O-R-N, Horn, Bob Kincaid, Horn. And if you've never sent me a contact request, do so, and we'll get you in right away. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV called the welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Now she needs help in this mean old world. Buys cassette tapes in the bargain bin. Loves Carlene Carter and Loretta Lynn. Tries to have fun on a Saturday night. Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? Takes two to make three, but one ain't here still. Chasing women and drinking beer. Says nobody understands how he feels. But that don't pay them monthly bills. Angry fat man on the radio. Wants to keep his taxes way down low. Says there ought to be a law. Angriest man you ever saw. Circles on the floor, round and round just like before. Baby fall down, baby get up. Baby needs a drink from a loving cup.
Baby dance, the welfare music. Will she ever stand? your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two underway, 15 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And so far tonight, yeah, well, we've got $150 to go on the fundraising effort. PayPal button, snail mail address, or both right over there at headonradionetwork.com. And lines lit, but lines open, 304-658-3333 as we go to the conversation portion of Conversation Radio, and away we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Not much. Pretty excited about next Monday night, so hopefully people will call in for that. Speaking of which, as I did on election night, you can get in to the show by calling on the regular phone numbers as well. Am I not correct about that?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the regular line will be open.
Yeah. But, I mean, you'll
But this, on... this lets us kind of go back to the old Friday on the front porch, everybody cussing and discussing together kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, before you mention it there, as you were in the middle of your filibuster, I kept thinking... Brought to you by the CSA, Christian States of America.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but it's otherwise known as Jesus Land.
Yep. And I don't know, sometimes...
How do they square that up, Kevin? How do you square that up in Georgia, which is a most Christian state?
Well, it goes back to, are you Christian or are you really Christian? And by that, I mean, do you believe it or do you live it? Because there's a big difference.
Or do you just give lip service to it and show up on Sundays?
Yeah. And the sad part is a lot of those people you were talking about that ain't making it down there in Georgia, that don't get any quote-unquote, well, don't get any food stamps or any sort of help, they'll be the first ones to show up on church on Sunday. And, you know, people in that church know of their condition, and they may or may not sometimes help. I know a lot of churches have the food pantries and that, but that only goes so far as helping people, especially if it's a smaller church-type food pantry. You know, those things ain't big. And they can't help too many people at once. And, of course, just like here in Colorado Springs, I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago how they had got that ban against the panhandling down here.
Right.
Downtown. And part of that ban meant that people that were there with the Salvation Army could no longer be there with the Salvation Army ringing the bell at the kettle during Christmas season, because that was against the panhandling ban. And, you know, it's a matter of us cutting off our face to spite our nose, I guess is a good way to say it. You know, we'll save the nose, but let's cut off the rest
right.
of the face. And
that's very well said, Kevin.
Well, you know, I wish the subject line could be more cheery, and I know we've got to talk about these things, but I honestly don't know what the solution is, because I just feel surrounded. You know, it's all over. It's in every part of our consciousness that somewhere, somehow, these right-wingers are finding a way, if not to do something, to get under our skin to the point that it, for me, it makes it hard to, you know, I guess continue advocating or whatever. You can't give up at it, but there's times that, you know, I want to throw up my hands and say, what's the point? Because, you know, it seems like some of the people who need help the most, who could benefit the most from a little bit of progressive politics in this country, are the ones that are fighting against it the most. And that disturbs me quite a bit, because I don't want to see anybody hurt. I don't want to see anybody struggle. But some of the people that are struggling are the ones that are supporting guys like Rush Limbaugh the most, you know. And what do you do then? You know, well, what do you say to them? You know, you're getting what you asked for. You know, that's what I find really troubling is when you talk to some of these people that you know are struggling even more than, say, I am on disability, and Rush Limbaugh's great. Well, okay, you keep believing that, and, you know, it's not going to turn that good for you. But it's just a few thoughts. I wonder where the solution is, and wonder, you know, in the case of these Russian babies, like you said, good for Putin. I think it's great that he's done that. And I just find it disturbing that it's like one of the most talked of stories, how Putin's put on a ban to keep those Russian kids from getting adopted from American families, you know, and American families are the ones probably suffering worse than some of the Russians right now. And just like Cassie just said it, I think the best of anybody, let's take care of our American children first. And, you know, good deal of those American children are white as well, but somehow a child from another country seems to be that much more appealing. I don't know what the word is, but, you know, seems like they feel like they're helping more if they rescue a child from another country as opposed to rescuing a child from America. So, just a few random thoughts. I don't know what the solution is. I wish I did. Maybe someone can come up with some solutions on this program, because just like you talked about that Obama thing, you know, Obama's going to take your tax money. And I just want to roll my eyes and, you know, please, you know, we got much more things to worry about than...
Well, maybe I'm wrong, Kevin, but watch and see. Somewhere this is burbled out onto Fox or God knows, you know, it's some 962nd tier right-wing babbler. These things are not organic.
No, they're not.
So, you know, just because I've noticed that the for-profit media, even the ones who are most desperate to advance pure unmitigated filth and garbage, you know, like Radio Rwanda, Fox.
Yep.
Stuff takes a while to percolate to them.
Yep.
But just, I don't know, I would be happy if this doesn't come out, but lo and behold, if I'm hearing it, it's out there.
Yeah. And I want to know who's, because really I've got to think somebody somewhere is sitting there thinking this stuff up.
Somebody somewhere is. And the somewhere, at least, I think, and I would imagine our buddy Jim would agree with me, the somewhere part of that is somewhere along K Street in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. This isn't somebody...
The somebody part is any number of Americans for Prosperity at the Crossroads, GPS, yada, 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 tax freedom, blah, blah. You get the idea. And they do it for nothing but their own partisan, sickening political ends.
Yeah.
Now, if we talk, and I guess, You know, if it might be, because I'm constantly second guessing myself. Yeah, you might say, well, yeah, you know, you tell stories of them poor people that ain't gotten the damn food for your own partisan political ends, Bob, damn it. But I don't see it that way. I see that as merely telling stories of the day-to-day living of people in this country for whom living is a day-to-day ordeal. There is no bigger job, no more difficult job in this country, Kevin, than the job of trying to stay alive in a country many of whose citizens want you dead.
Yep.
You know, there's a certain class of American for whom Jesus' statement that the poor you have always with you is pretty easily solved.
Exactly.
Well, you know, if they just die and go off, you know, Jesus loves them. I don't.
Yep. And trouble is just like that old saying that, you know, first they came for that group, and then they came for this other group, and then they came for me. These people don't realize that someday that group is going to be them. And if the poor...
No, they won't, because Jesus loves them too much to let them ever be them. They understand precisely zero about population dynamics.
Exactly, yeah.
They understand precisely nothing about economics. A lot of people are, you know, this country, I don't know if it still holds true, but I remember back in the 80s and 90s constantly hearing about this country had the lowest rate of savings of any so-called first world nation out there. And I see no reason to think it's any different. It's probably worse.
No.
You know, one of the reasons, it's really funny, one of the big economic challenges that faced this country at the close of the Second World War was the fact that there were massive amounts of savings. And part of the creation of the consumer culture was to spend that out of American pockets.
Yep.
I mean, the two really do correlate. Well, it worked well or too well.
Yep.
Because even the people who think that, you know, by the grace of God and a Bank of America Visa card, they're not like those people. They're one paycheck away. This whole country is one paycheck away. But a bunch of this whole country has no clue. I've mentioned it before, but there's a scene in the first Men in Black movie where Tommy Lee Jones looks at Will Smith and says, there is always an Arkelian battle cruiser hovering, waiting to destroy the earth. The trick is to keep people from knowing it because they couldn't function otherwise. If this country had a fully functioning appreciation of how near disaster it really is, they'd be either in the streets or in the churches or utterly immobilized in their easy chairs. One of the three.
Yep. Too true, and unfortunately, I think in the streets would be the last of the three.
Until the cable goes out.
Yep.
I agree.
Yep. By the way, did you get that email I sent you today about that story about FreedomWorks?
I saw one last night.
Yeah, and that was about the Indiegogo, I think. I sent that story about FreedomWorks. I sent a link to it that the Washington Post did a story on it as well. So I don't know if it sent you the whole story, but I know it sent you the link today. But it's quite interesting reading as far as what happened with that Dick Armey walking into the Office of FreedomWorks and attempting a coup, which ended rather badly for him. But
yeah, that story I'm familiar with.
Yep.
Joan Walsh appearing on... Chris Matthews this evening referred to Dick Armey as a grifter, which I thought was just delightful. Now I'm looking through my email here, and I don't, because, I, well, I everything that's not junk email gets open.
I know. Yeah.
And for the life of me, I don't see it here, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, I know it. I assumed it got sent to you anyway, so I'll have to check. But if you're familiar with it, that's kind of all I wanted to, because I know we had talked about it the other night, and I just am amazed that the man could walk into that building with a thug by his side and kick out the first two officers of that. And then he gets bought off.
At gunpoint.
Yeah, at gunpoint. And then when his coup goes badly for him, he gets bought out by someone essentially to undo the coup, so to speak, and all is well. He goes away for $8 million, you know. And that's how the 1% operates. If it can't be bought off with money, they'll attempt to buy it off with guns. You know, it's the same old story. But that's how they operate in their world. And, of course, I could care less if Freedom Works had a coup or not. I just find it interesting that, you know, this is how these people operate. It's nothing to them to do something like that. And
well, what do you think they've been doing to the American people?
Well, I know.
I mean, that's essentially what's gone on for at least the last 2 years in the House of Representatives. Give in to our demands, or the economy gets it.
Yeah, well, why do you think we're supposedly getting ready to go over that financial cliff? Because they ain't budging, and I know it will affect people badly. But
it has been portrayed in the for-profit media, Kevin, as something that's going to happen all at once.
Right, exactly.
And by God, it's a cliff.
And it's again motivated by fear.
When everything doesn't happen all at once, although Tim Geithner, I guess, came out today and said we are 5 days from going broke as far as the debt ceiling is concerned. But what the hell do the Republicans care? Their goal is the end of government. Their goal is a sort of end of the Weimar Republic-esque crisis that puts them in power and puts the bit in their teeth and lets them run.
Yep.
I mean, there's a very famous photo out there of a German woman in the late 1920s, early 1930s. Feeding the fire to keep her home warm with Weimar Republic Deutschmarks.
Yep.
Because inflation had gotten so bad that, you know, it was like 40,000 marks to the dollar or something, or 4 million maybe, I don't know.
Yep.
Well, that's that, because, see, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where the Republicans get to say, see, we told you this paper money wasn't no good. I saw a story earlier today. You know, we all had a big laugh, I guess, when the story broke earlier in the year about how some birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger eater and legislator in Georgia had introduced a debts of the state may be paid in gold coin of the realm only bill. We all said, look at the dumbass bagger Confederate. Did you know the same thing got introduced by a dumbass bagger in Washington State, Kevin?
Today, or?
Oh, I mean, in the recent past.
Yep. No, I didn't. The disease
is metastasizing, and I use that word for a very precise reason.
The only thing I would say is I would warn the teabaggers, be careful what you ask for. You just might get it, and I don't think it's going to go over well with the American people if that happens. And that's my one warning to them. You may not like what you get as a result. And
well, looky here. How many guns did they recoup in Los Angeles on a guns for grocery swap. I mean, one car came in with like 22 weapons and got $900 worth of gift cards from Ralph's.
Oh, yeah.
Thousands of guns came in.
Yep.
And maybe that points a little toward the optimism side of the debate last night. Carol's side being the there will be change position. Because when people are swapping guns for butter, well, you get an idea of where we are.
Yeah, I just can't help thinking, though, Bob, of the 3 million or so guns sold ever since Sandy Hook. Not 3 million guns, 3 million semi-automatic Bushmasters that were sold since Sandy Hook.
Yeah, and when you really get down and roll around on the ground with that, Kevin, doesn't that just become a little bit sickening? Because that means that somebody there at the company that manufactures those things had to have at some point looked up and said, "Hoo-wee, these massacres of these little babies sure is good for business, ain't they?"
Exactly. And unfortunately, that's another self-fulfilling prophecy, too, because with 3 million of those babies sold, you know, 3 million of them all ain't going to the good guys.
Well, no, because, of course, you can come down to a state like West Virginia or Virginia and buy like crazy, put them in the trunk, and go somewhere like New York, Massachusetts, what have you.
Yep.
Because, as I said, and some of these things I think just sort of go off into the ether, and that's the end of it. All firearms begin life as legal firearms.
Exactly.
It's only when they lay on the table at the gun show and somebody comes up with the right amount of money, or when they get sold online at a premium because someone cannot legally purchase them.
Yep.
Now, that story's out there. That they become illegal. It's kind of like Rush Limbaugh, if people want to think about it this way. Rush Limbaugh got himself a prescription medication, Jones. Okay?
Right.
To the point that he was, you know, chewing him up for the refreshing burst of flavor.
Right.
And to that point where he gave his housekeeper a cigar box full of ice-cold cash money to go out on the streets and bring him back a cigar box full of pills.
Right.
Well, those pills are legally manufactured controlled substances, right?
Exactly.
And they are legal as long as they go from the manufacturer to the distributor or the warehouse to, you know, your local cut-rate pharmacy or whatever.
Yep.
But then somebody steals a pad of scripts or you know, knocks over the pharmacy or goes doctor shopping and gets script after script after script after script.
Right.
And they do that so that they can put it onto the underground market.
Right.
Well, when Rush Limbaugh could no longer support his narcotic addiction with prescriptions, he sent his housekeeper out, and what he bought then. And see, this is a very important point. Were street drugs, okay? Even if they still, even if they were still stamped Eli Lilly or who the hell ever,
yep.
They had become, not through some chemical process, but through an entirely economic process, street drugs.
Right.
Rush Limbaugh, I remember when he did it. My friends, I have a prescription narcotic addiction. Bullshit, Rush. You got a street drug, Jones. You got the monkey, baby. And it is a street drug monkey.
Yep.
And the same thing happens with firearms. It's not through some magical process. It is through an economic one.
Yep.
It's kind of like the miracle of the mass, where you chew up the cracker and somewhere between your soft palate and your tummy, It literally turns into Jesus meat.
Right.
That is a faith process. Well, this is an economic process.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of, I think it was you that mentioned it, and I like the idea. If I legally own a gun and it is stolen from me and it falls into the hands of someone who commits a crime with it, that I am liable to some extent for that crime. Now, obviously, if someone breaks into my home and gets in my safe, I think liability is very low. But what I'm getting to is, in the same way that you're talking about with the guns, the prescription drugs right now, all my quote-unquote good drugs I keep locked up because I've had some taken from me before by people that have came in here for various reasons, as in, you know, people helping me with certain, you know, with things. So if I had those drugs stolen from me and someone gets caught selling them on the street, should I be liable? And it relates to the guns, because I like that idea. I just wonder where the liability stops, because I think there's got to be...
Well, if a gun is stolen from you, just as if the pills are stolen from you, unless there's some sort of gross negligence that takes place to make that possible, I think you should be in the clear.
But what would you say would be gross negligence with a gun? Is kind of my point, because, okay...
I don't know. Becoming an invitation...
Right. I sleep with my gun underneath my pillow, and I happen to leave the gun under the pillow when I went out to the store and came back, and the whole house was...
Or, you know, you take your gun with you down to buy a loaf of bread and a jar of peanut butter and jelly, and you got your Bushmaster just sitting there on the back seat.
Right.
And you don't lock the car. At that point, you have become what I think the law calls an attractive nuisance.
Right. Exactly. And that's where I think the liability should lie, because... How often do you see that where someone doesn't have a gun properly stored and through an act of robbery or break-in or whatever?
Let's make it a little more interesting. Let's go to a gun show where nobody has to show anything but a wad of Benjamins.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
And you're sitting there at your table, your gun selling table at the gun show, and you're in West Virginia.
Yep.
And a big burly man who looks about as at home in a flannel shirt and a pair of overalls as he would in a Daffy Duck suit comes up to you and says, "I am proud hillbilly. I would like to purchase weapon for home defense."
Yep.
And you say, "Well, sure thing, Clyde. I got you right here. Look here, I got you a little AR-15. Isn't that nice? I will take."
Yep.
Now, you know, or should know, that that ain't no hillbilly.
Exactly.
And that ain't no home defense weapon. But see, you're also not going, and, you know, the fact that you know or should know is borne out by the fact that, pardon me there, could I see your West Virginia driver's license?
Yep.
Oh, left at home. Ah, well, we're all friends here, aren't we? At that point, you know or should know, and you're part of the problem.
Exactly.
But it's also a gun show, it's a swap meet, it's a sewing circle, whatever. So you're not going to ask for any ID, and you're certainly not going to write down the serial number of the firearm that you have just sold to your friend, unlikely hillbilly.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah. And that's where I, you know, have you heard of any states that have, I know there's, it seems like I know that there are some states that have attempted to deal with that, but do you know of any states that have,
that's one of the fundamental problems. I can't sit here and tell you what state has and what state hasn't, because there are 50 separate sets of firearm laws.
Yep.
You know, states' rights.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, here in West Virginia, we got a different thing going on than we do in Alabama. I mean, I can tell you a story. At the time that my father passed away,
mm-hmm.
we had some folks who were within the family who weren't what you would call screwed down real good.
Yep.
And had demonstrated a predilection for firing shotguns within his own home.
Yep.
Well, I was down there emptying out the house and didn't feel real comfy because he had said some things. And good redneck that I was, I ran down to the Shooting Irons Emporium.
Yep.
And I was just going to buy a cheap-ass little pistol. Well, I couldn't do that. Didn't have an Alabama driver's license. He said, that won't stop you from buying that shotgun, son.
Yep.
So a shotgun it was. And it was, never mind the merits, but every law has different and entirely screwy, every state has different and entirely screwy regulations and requirements and such like.
Yep. That's just unbelievable to think that the guy wouldn't sell you the pistol, but he'd sell you the shotgun.
No, he couldn't. He was a law-abiding gun dealer.
Well, of course, I'm sure.
Now, if it had turned out that there was a swap meet down to the armory,
yep,
I probably could have gone down there and bought me a Colt 1911 A1 or whatever, or Beretta, what have you. How much is it? $300. I got $325. It's beautiful.
Yep.
So, yeah, there it is. Kevin, it's awful good to hear from you this evening, and I look forward to our New Year's Eve extravaganza.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. So looking forward to hearing everybody that night. And make sure you all call in, even if you don't have a Skype account. Those phone lines are open.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you, Bob.
Yes, indeed, Kevin. You take care.
Good New Year.
You too. Bye now. It's our buddy Kevin from Colorado Springs. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's me, Poor Earth, in the chat, but my name is Susan.
Yes, yes. Welcome.
How are you? I just wanted to call and tell you Happy New Year.
Oh, well, Happy New Year to you, too.
You know, when we were sitting and talking about the gun laws that vary from state to state and that there's 50 sets of them, I got to thinking about cars and how the same is true with automobile licenses and with the driving regulations. Although they're similar in every state, they do vary a little bit. And sometimes when you move from one state to another, you have to go into the DMV. You always have to get a local license, and you're supposed to do it within a very short amount of time in most states. And when you do, very often they make you take a written test so that they are aware that you know their regulations. But there's nothing like that with guns.
Oh, heavens no.
It's bizarre how few regulations there are surrounding guns in this country. Even in the states that have strict laws, it's amazing. It's actually mind-boggling when you think about it. When you think about a gun, when it is designed to kill. And another thing that really bothers me about this whole gun conversation that we've all been having is that people talk about having a gun for protection. I don't understand how that works. How does a gun protect you?
Well, I can tell you how the fantasy runs.
No, I know how the fantasy runs, but that is a fantasy.
Yeah, because unless you get the drop on the bad guy, you lose.
Right, a gun doesn't protect, a gun kills.
Right, that's what points out the fallacy of what Wayne LaPierre said in his Not a Press Conference last week.
Exactly.
He said the only thing that'll stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
But
something missing there. It has to be a good guy with a gun who gets the drop on the bad guy.
Right. It's we don't deal with people that we're protecting ourselves from the way they did in the old Western movies where you have the shootout at high noon and everybody draws at once. That's not how it happens. How it happens is the guy comes up behind you and knocks you on the head. And how good, and not only does he have your money then, he also has your gun.
Yeah, yeah.
You cannot protect yourself from surprise.
Well, I read a fascinating dialogue exchange, if you will, between a couple of writers over at The Atlantic. One of them was Ta-Nehisi Coates, and I'm probably mispronouncing that one way or another, or probably several. And the other was Jeffrey Goldberg. Mr. Coates was on the side of, I don't want a gun, and Mr. Goldberg was on the side of, oh, yes, you do. And Mr. Coates, at one point, talked about the fact that his father was a member of the Black Panthers. He had grown up in a culture of, you know, firearms kept for self-defense. And he had reached a conclusion that he did not wish to have a firearm for self-defense, and that, frankly, he would rather be dead than have to carry a damn gun.
He listed
a very well-reasoned, a very well-reasoned thought process for reaching that conclusion. On the other hand, Mr. Goldberg incredulously asks him, are you telling me if you and I were walking through the mall and we saw a guy coming toward us with an AR-15, you wouldn't wish you had a gun?
Oh, hell no, I wouldn't wish I had a gun.
Well, I just kind of stopped right there because, you know, he thought he really had him in a corner with that, because that's one of those NRA talking points.
I would wish I had a pillar between me and the guy.
Right.
I'd hit the floor.
But you know, there's it shows the fundamental fallacy, Susan, of these gun people's thinking.
Does it go back to the old cowboy movies where everybody was quick draw? What is it? What is it with people thinking these things? These are people that don't normally shoot guns, I think. These are people that have never shot a gun or have never even thought about it. And all of a sudden, they're all these experts on getting the drop on criminals. I don't get it. And all these arming teachers. Do you realize that right now, as we speak, there are classes being taught in Salt Lake City, Utah, to 300 teachers on how to shoot a gun by another one of these nut job gun clubs that I kind of looked into, and it's just another local lobbying group, a kind of a stepchild arm of the NRA. And I mean, I don't get it. What teacher would willingly go to something like that? I would not put my kid in a school that had a teacher that took a class from the NRA for an afternoon and now is an expert on Bushmasters and is going to go slinging that gun to school.
Right, because you asked the question, and I'll answer it. Yes, where I think this comes from, this is a Civil War and post mythology that's been promulgated, Susan. Because
so
if you look
years ago, we've grown nowhere.
Yeah, because the pistol, as it was understood in 1789, you know, the earliest days of the Constitution, was A, horribly unreliable. B,
yeah,
had to be muzzle loaded just like any musket did. C, was a flintlock. Or at best cap and ball, okay.
Yep.
I mean, and so you know, it didn't provide any advantage. It's only
no,
with
you
it's only with the it's,
your
it's,
bow your crossbow faster.
Yeah, it's only with the creation of the Colt revolver in 1851 that the sidearm becomes a player in the game, and it's only after the creation of fully ready to fire cartridge ammunition, you know, where the bullet and the case, mm-hmm, and the gunpowder are all there together, that
right,
the mythology of the shootout and the quick draw fanning the gun, fanning the hammer, all comes into the mythology.
Even then, a slow, you know, compared with the semi-automatic weapons, there is no comparison. I mean, as far as...
No, there isn't.
I have some familiarity with guns, but not automatic weapons. And my father was a target shooter, and so I learned how to shoot at a young age. I didn't enjoy it. It was too noisy. But, you know, I realized how dangerous a gun is. I would never, ever, ever think that having a gun under my pillow would protect me from anything. If I'm sound asleep and somebody comes in my house and I start to reach under a pillow for a gun, I'm already dead. And not only am I dead, but the guy has my gun, and now he's even more armed. So, yeah, guns in your house, if they aren't locked up, are dangerous. If they are locked up, they're useless for protection. So what are you going to do? Anybody tells me they have a gun because they like to hunt or they need to hunt, or, I mean, I lived in the wilderness. I understand that. I've had to protect myself from bears.
But even the I have to hunt thing, Susan, as we've been pointing out, has an element of fallacy built into it.
Oh yeah, that's the wilderness complex. Yes, I understand that completely. It costs most people that go hunting and say they do it for their family and their meat. They need the meat. Most of them, by the time they get finished spending all the money and all their little accoutrements to go hunting with, could have bought a side of beef. You know, I mean, we all know that. But I mean, if they want to do that, I can understand that a gun is a tool in that case. I will buy that. I don't like it, but, you know, I don't want to kill Bambi, but I understand it. And I'll buy that for now. I'll give them that. I'll even give them the sport target range thing, as long as they're not shooting at targets shaped like people. If they're shooting at round ones, okay. If they want to compete and it's like
clay
a dart
pigeons.
Game. Yes, something like that. I'll give them that, yes. When you're not at the range, lock the gun either in a locker at the range, like they do in England, or have it in a place in your home where it's locked that's already been approved by whoever's licensing you. Fine. That's fine. But to say you need it for protection, that person cannot prove to me how that gun protects them. In any way. A lock on the door protects you. A burglar alarm protects you. A 911 call protects you. A smoke alarm protects you. A safety belt in your car protects you. A car seat for your kid protects them. But a gun protects nothing. A gun is to go after someone or something, or to shoot game or targets.
Right. Because I come back to that scenario in the mall that those two guys were writing about. You know, there's that moment. So you see the guy with the AR-15, Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say he's got the muzzle pointed at the floor. He's just carrying it. Mm-hmm. He's not in uniform. And Wayne LaPierre told me the only thing that will stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. So you get the drop on him, right? I don't mean you.
Who's the bad guy?
Right. You've got the drop on him, and you squeeze off. Oh, I don't know. Let's go whole hog on this, and you squeeze off six or seven rounds into a mall crowd to take out the bad guy with the gun.
Oh man.
Now, then you go up and you find out it's a toy that he was carrying, because we do have those kinds of toys in this country. We're a very violent culture, and it's a toy that he just bought at the toy store that he was taking home to his kid for Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I thought I saw...
Or maybe he bought it at the mall gun store and was legally transporting it out of the building.
Right. In some states, it's legal to carry a gun as long as it's visible without a permit. In a case like that, if I were the guy that saw the guy across the mall with the gun, I would try to slip to the side, try to get in a place of cover. I would have my cell phone out. That would be my armament.
Right. Your cell phone would be more of a defense.
I would be 911-ing right now.
Yeah.
And I would say, I don't want to alarm you, but there's a guy that has what appears to be a gun walking down the mall.
And then let the cops do what the cops do.
You deal with it. You're the professional. I'm going to hide in the ladies' lavatory. I'll see you later.
Right, but and then let the cops do what the cops are professionally trained to do, and like they did
exactly.
In New York, and come up and shoot eight or nine New York City residents trying to take down a guy with a knife.
Yeah, this is the thing. Even the cops don't get it right. How can some guy packing get it right? Did you read that thing? It was going around, was an article about, written by one of the guys that helped take down the shooter, in the Gabby Giffords case. He almost killed the guy that took down the shooter.
He was ready to go, ready to rock and roll.
Right, and instead of shooting him, he had an opportunity to just push him against the wall, which he did, and it turned out that was the guy that had shot the shooter or something. I don't know. It gets very confusing in cases like that. So what you had was the shooter, and you had two other people that were packing in that same crowd. And it makes you wonder, you know, it's amazing that more people weren't killed with everybody packing.
Yeah, and just to contemplate for a moment the situation at Sandy Hook Elementary. Imagine some cop running in there and adding his own hail of bullets to another hail of bullets in a classroom with walls that ricochet.
Even the cops
will not get on the same side as Wayne LaPierre on this on this issue, because Wayne LaPierre should probably be locked up and given one of those lovely dinner jackets with the sleeves that tie in the back and a purple crayon between his toes to write on the wall with.
Yeah, he needs a rubber room. Wayne LaPierre has probably never been in a shootout with an armed assault rifle aimed at him. He's probably never, I don't know whether he's ever been at war, but our malls aren't war zones. At least they didn't used to be. And neither are our schools. And if we try to turn them into that, what is that saying about us? Instead of trying to solve the problems that we have that create people that want to go out and kill little children, or, you know, instead of doing that, we're just going to give every child an armed guard?
That's what they want, isn't it?
Yeah. I have a little 2.5-year-old granddaughter, and I've got some other grandchildren that are in school. And if somebody goes into their school and says that the teachers are supposed to be armed, I think I'd want to take them out of that school and say, you know, I'm going to go broke if I have to go to some kind of Montessori or something.
And the same thing applies, Susan, to the list that has so many people incensed that was published in the Hudson Valley of all the people who had concealed carry permits.
They violated my Jesus-given amendment rights to secretly be... No, you know what? If I'm a
parent of a small child, you know, can Johnny come over for a play date?
I want to know where that gun is. Right?
I want to know where you... And, you know, I look on that map. I'm sorry, ma'am. You've got a house full of guns.
You've got a carry permit. I want to know where that gun is before I send Johnny over there.
By the time you've asked that question, Johnny will have been effectively disinvited.
You mean you don't support the Second Amendment that Jesus wrote into the Constitution for us to be able to fight off?
Johnny would not be allowed to play with little Susie ever again, and that's fine with me.
Because you never know when little Susie's going to be packing.
But I looked at that map, and I thought, you know what? Looking at that map, it might be easier just to put dots on the people that don't have the permits.
Yeah, and of course ultimately.
Those were only handgun permits.
Those were concealed carry permits.
That doesn't count for any of the assault rifles that are spread around that.
No, those were only concealed carry permits. Those were permits that didn't speak to any type of weaponry at all.
It was just the permits. And the people complaining that have those permits are, you know, if you don't want your name publicized to get a public permit issued by the county, which is a public process, and just like the ownership of your house is public information that anybody can go and get, if you don't want it on there, then don't get one. I can't understand why they're upset that somebody was clever enough to go look on the county records and then go put it on a MapQuest.
And yet, you know? The story I read over at CNN, Susan, pointed out that they found some journalism professor from some journalism school who said it was exceedingly unethical for this newspaper to publish this. It only encourages people to skirt the law and not obey the laws about. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't at all. But that's the depth and
the
reach of the NRA.
My favorite argument on that case was talk about disconnected logic. My favorite argument was the one, and several people made it. Oh, you shouldn't have put those. That was just like a shopping list for thieves. So
apparently really stupid thieves, maybe.
Main Street has a gun, so we can go and rob it. If you've got the gun for protection, how can you say that printing it in the paper that you have the gun for protection puts you up for theft? I thought you had.
Well, Susan, I think that's a little bit of a confession now, isn't it?
It is a confession. It's a confessing that the gun does not protect you.
Right.
It's just an attractive nuisance to a thief. That's what the person believes.
And if that logic holds water, then every gun store in America should be getting knocked over every night.
That's true. That's true. That when they lock their doors, they don't put bars on their windows, do they? Well, I guess they do in some areas. Yeah. These are arguments. The line of logic just never adds up with these people. They don't follow reason at all.
No, it all falls. At some point in time, if you meticulously go over their line of so-called reasoning, it ultimately, at some point in the process, will fall apart into nothing but abject gun fantasy.
It's illogical. It's, you know, as Falk would say, it's illogical.
And that's why I have used and taken some grief for using the perfectly rational term fetishism to describe the way some of these people are about their firearms.
Well, we're talking about a group of people that are consistent in their ability to disregard facts that they don't like and consider facts optional. They do it with their politics, they do it with their religion, and they do it with their guns. It's the same people.
Oh, you mean they cling to their Bibles and their guns?
Yeah, Obama was right, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. There's a lot of things that I take issue with him.
Yeah, I do too, but not that one.
No.
That one he was right on. Yep. I laughed when I heard that. Yeah.
And the funny thing is, Susan, there are not two less compatible things than guns and a religion founded upon the teachings of a guy who said, "Love your enemy."
Well, if
Jesus is alive in 2012 and that home invader comes through, he's not going to sit there and stitch pieces with his home AR-15 or MAC-10 or whatever. He's going to say, hey, you didn't have to sneak in. If you would have knocked at the door and asked me, I would have given you everything I had.
That's all in line with the disregarding of facts that we're following with this group of people. You know, they claim that they are followers, that Jesus is their avatar, but they don't really understand what all those teachings. But I don't believe it, but that's what it is. You're right. Jesus didn't teach people to go and kill people that offended them.
Peter put up thy sword.
Feet, wasn't it?
Peter put up thy sword. Those who live by the sword shall die by the sword.
Well, that's turning out to be true in this country, that's for sure.
Absolutely. But see, there's one little problem, and we've got these weirdo little right-wing lurkers that listen every now and then, and there's only one problem with what you just said, Susan. You lost them the minute you used the word avatar. My Jesus weren't blue.
Oh yeah, the movie. They worship someone that they don't even, you know. If you were to take all the concepts surrounding the Jesus entity and put it on a man today that is in modern times, he would look something like a hippie. He'd be Cat Stevens, man. He'd be because that's the kind of thing, of person he was illustrated in their own book.
Yeah.
So,
you don't realize that when you spend all your time thumping it and none of your time reading it.
No, they just cherry pick the facts that they want to use at the time that they want to use them. So they can make it mean anything they want. They do the same thing with the laws. They do the same thing with politics. They do it with everything. And now they're doing it with guns.
Yeah, it's like Jack from Shreveport just wrote in a minute ago, Susan. He said, most states have interstate compacts, and this is in response to what you said about driver's licenses. Most states have interstate compacts for laws concerning driver's licenses. These are designed to restrict what drivers can do. But for gun laws, the state's compacts are designed to open up each state to the other state's gun freedoms. We haven't quite gotten there yet, but that's on the dream list of the NRA. In 2012, for heaven's sakes, when we can't come to an agreement that a pair of people who happen to be of the same gender who love each other and get married in Massachusetts can have their marriage recognized in Alabamistan, we can't agree about that. But on the other hand, Alabama wants New York to recognize an Alabamian's right to pack heat,
have a gun
anywhere he chooses to do so in New York.
And you know, that whole marriage thing, that is unconstitutional.
Sure it is.
It says in the Constitution that all the states have to recognize each other's marriage laws. And it doesn't say anything to that effect about
Well, full faith and credit is in the Constitution. There's nothing overtly about marriage in the Constitution,
okay.
But yeah, no, your point is well taken.
Well, we keep running into this states versus national rights, and one of the big problems about it is we're getting no leadership and guidance on it from the Supreme Court or Congress. They're just backing away, and the states are becoming like wrestlers. Without any referee. So the Supreme Court is not giving any kind of guidance on this, and neither is and the Congress. They aren't doing anything.
Oh no, the Supreme Court gave lots of guidance, Susan, in the Heller decision.
No, they're saying leave it to the states.
Well, no, in the Heller decision, they said lock and load. Every American in this country has
true.
A right. To gun
yeah,
up.
You're right there. Yeah. Okay, let's see. They're not making any, they're not restricting anything. And they're not upholding any of the state's restrictions either. The main thing I wanted to ask you today was for something for you to think about. Do you really think if we have no agreement on this whole, budget thing by the end of the, and we go into the austerity plan that was mapped out, the suicide compact that they all made. Do you really think that our government is actually going to fall apart? What do you think will happen?
No, our government's not going to fall apart.
What do you think will happen? I'm curious.
I think what's going to happen is that in several instances, the people who carry this country on their backs, i.e. working people making a hell of a lot less than $250,000 a year, are going to take it on the chin at some point if there is not a fix. And since the Republican House of Representatives is apparently collectively putting LSD in everything they consume, and, the really bad stuff, too, that makes you see snakes.
Mm-hmm.
We know for a fact, for instance, that 2 million people are going to get the shaft on unemployment benefits.
Right. Yeah.
And the Republicans are more than happy to let that happen because chinless Mitch McConnell today said that the only way he'd ever tolerate that is if there were equal and matching spending cuts.
Well, now, okay. So suppose that all happens, and then. Geithner came out today and said that also on the 31st, the debt ceiling was going to be reached, and that he could delay it for a couple months But now, with the austerity thing, he probably couldn't delay it for long. So...
Yeah, and what...
Suppose they make no agreement on that, and they make no agreement on the debt ceiling. Isn't this going to defeat the Republicans' whole concept of takeover? Because the stock market will crash. And these are the people that want to take over the country, the wealthy fascists that are running the Tea Party people and getting them to do their bidding, using them as puppets. Aren't they kind of shooting themselves in the feet, to use one of their gun metaphors?
They're not that perceptive, Susan.
But, I mean, it's getting really interesting.
Oh, it absolutely is.
In a Chinese curse sort of a way.
Yeah, the may you live in interesting times, right.
Yeah.
It is, but understand that I don't know, you'd probably have to catch him in a really candid moment, you know, kind of like Senator Mike Crapo, the devoted Mormon bishop of 30 years, who was busted for DUI last week after...
Oh, yeah, that was it, right.
After pounding vodka shots somewhere in Alexandria.
That was amazing.
You'd have to catch him in one of those more candid moments, but if you ask him, they'll tell you that you know, government is bad. There's a whole lot of these, and they're generally Republicans and teabagger types, these preppers, these doomsdayists, these apocalypticists, these come Lord Jesus types, who would be more than happy to see it all fall down. Because,
why? I mean, what advantage do they have? They'll fall down too.
No, they're not going to fall down. So they love Jesus, and they got guns. They're going to live off the land.
It's more fantasy.
And pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
More fantasy. They'll shoot their way out of it.
Right. Absolutely. Because I'm being a bit of a smartass, but you know, the only reason that we have financial problems in this country is because of them socialist, communist, social security and Medicare and Medicaid, except for their Medicare. And that's the good Medicare the teabaggers get.
Well, I'll tell you,
but welfare and food stamps are just breaking America.
If anything happens to Social Security and Medicare, you're going to see a gray liberation movement in this country that is going to scare the hell out of Washington.
Yeah, but see, Susan, that's not going to happen.
Oh, yeah, it is.
No. I got to make this really,
I'll be
really...
marching to D.C. myself.
No. I'm not saying you won't march. I'm saying it's not going to happen.
He's going to lead it.
No. That's not what I'm saying. The Social Security and Medicare benefits...
Oh, you're saying it is not going to go under. Yeah.
No. No, this is what I'm saying. Any fix, any austerity, any anything is not going to touch people who are current or nearly current recipients of Medicare or Social Security. Now, I will soon turn 50 years old. My generation has already been screwed once.
Yeah.
Because we don't get to quit work till we're 67.
Yeah, I know.
All right?
We are the ones...
My generation and the generations behind me are the ones who are going to get screwed. And so
yeah.
the gray generation, yeah, like I'm not. I mean, my hair's snow white. Come on.
I'm not as gray as you, but I'm a lot older than you.
But the point, Susan, is that your generation is being primed to stay home because your generation actually has a history of hell raising. You know, your generation burned draft cards. Your generation demanded the fulfillment of the women's rights movement. Your generation did a lot. My generation has largely sat around scratching its butt.
It's getting us pissed off, Bob, because it's all being undone. We're getting pissed off. Everything we march for women's rights, for racial equality, it's all being turned backwards. We're watching it being turned off.
But what the power boys have figured out in Washington is that as long as your cable stays on, and I don't mean yours, you understand what I'm getting at, Susan.
No, yeah, they think they can buy us.
As long as your generation's cable stays on, and as long as they don't touch your present benefits.
Oh, but they're already talking about it. They're already talking about it. They're already talking about doing away with the way the COLA.
Oh, the chain CPI, absolutely.
Yeah, that's just a tiny thing, but it's a start. and it's enough to raise everybody's hackles. And there are people, I'm not one of them, but there are people that Social Security is their only benefit. And you take $20 a month from them, even, and they have to make decisions about food and medicine.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
They don't, you know, you can, you know, some of these people in D.C., they, oh, well, it's just a little bit of money. No, it's not. It'll add up to billions of dollars over the next few years. So that means everybody's going to be given some.
But why, Susan, are they going to be giving? They are going to be giving to pay for the sins of Wall Street.
Right.
This is your money.
We're not going to take it. I'm telling you, we're not going to take it. We are not going to take it. They're starting, and you know, you are thinking like somebody with a brain when you say, well, they wouldn't be so foolish as to screw the seniors because they know they'll come after them. No, they don't know that. No, you're thinking like a logical person. That's not what they're doing. They are going to, the snake is shooting its own tail. It kind of looks like that. And if that happens, I'm telling you, we're on the march. We're going to get in our walkers.
And the larger question of that is, what does on the march mean? Because, see, protest, and I've got some experience with this, at least in the modern age, because I've witnessed and participated in some of it. Protest in Washington, D.C. for the modern age means that you show up on a Saturday, you shake your signs, 100 people get arrested in a catch-and-release program that's, you know, kind of inconvenient, but it's not that bad, and then you go home by Sunday.
Well, maybe we need to have a gray occupation.
Well, that's coming and not leaving, but they're prepared for that, too. They're prepared for that.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what we can come up with, but we're not gonna go down without a fight. That's for sure. And I'm serious. I'm as serious as a heart attack about this. I haven't done any real serious protests. I've been kind of watching this whole Occupy thing because I was very active in the 60s and 70s. But I'm gonna tell you, if they continue the way they're going, I'm not going to sit on this couch.
No, and there's one more, you know, there's one more thing for, and I don't mean to be deliberately divisive, Susan, but there's one more thing for your generation to take into consideration, and that's this. Where are the people who get screwed in my generation and the generations behind me going to go when the screwing takes place?
You're going to come to home to mom.
Your basement.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's why we're all upset.
Yeah, so I mean,
we got you guys out of the house, and now here you are back again. This is not good. I've got grandchildren I'm babysitting for because the parents can't afford anybody to watch them.
Believe me,
I gotta work.
I know. Our eldest child is married and has three children.
Well,
they're babies.
You know what I'm talking about.
And we're terrified.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's so hard.
They have no health. They have no health insurance.
And do they think that we don't care about these people? Do they think that we older people don't care that our children are not going to have retirement? That our grandchildren may not be able to afford the college that we went to? My husband went to college on the GI Bill.
Yeah.
You know, we're not, I've got kids that can't, you know, I was lucky that one of my daughters got a free ride through college, but, you know, it's really hard.
Well, Agnes and I are trying to get our kids to focus enough, and they're teenagers, focus enough to understand that if they want better for themselves, they had better, by God, be about as smart as there is to have here in West Virginia, and be able to get scholarships and grants and still loans, or it ain't going to happen for them.
They'll still be in debt. And it's really, really hard. And, it just shouldn't be that way. And, but they start eking away, chipping away at the Social Security benefits. They start chipping away at the Medicare, and they're going to see that sleeping dragon wake up?
Well, it might. You might want to brew the coffee just to get them kind of.
Okay.
There's nothing like fresh coffee to get people up from their drowsy.
I can dig up some stuff and give it to them.
Yeah, get them. I sincerely hope you're right, Susan, because.
But again,
that's not to say that the fiscal cliff is a fiscal cliff. You know, Charlie Pierce, who writes over at Esquire.com, refers to it as a gently sloping fiscal incline. It's the same degree as it's the same sort of alarmist BS that they've been especially the right wing's been hollering for years about Social Security is doomed. Well, you know, the whole reason for screwing my generation and fixing it so we can't retire until 67 was to make it rock solid, sound as the pound, until 2037, at which point it continues on with no tweaking whatsoever, with only a minimal reduction in benefits. However, it could be fixed. Well, even that could be taken care of with something as simple as lifting the cap.
The cap is they should actually lower the age,
lifting the cap on earnings, because remember,
I know. Lift the cap, lower the age, and everything would be equal. But I think of this not as a slope, and not even as a gentle slope. I think of it more like the rack. You know, the old torture chamber thing, where they just slowly turn the screw a little bit more and a little bit more.
Yeah.
You won't notice it until your feet fall off.
Yeah, our dear friend Patty out in North Dakota calls it the fiscal bluff.
That's pretty cute.
Yeah, I thought so too. Susan, it's been a wonderful conversation.
This should happen
more often.
Yes, it should. And I'm going to try to be there on the New Year's Eve.
Well, I hope you will. We'll have a lot of fun.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
All right, take care, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. You know her in the Horn and Malloy chat rooms as For Earth. That's Susan, with a lot of good ideas and a lot of wisdom. And again, what she was talking about, we're going to have sort of a free-for-all New Year's Eve. Granted, I'm no Dick Clark yet, still alive. But I think we will have a damn fine time. In the course of the conversation, though, I was talking about this goober from this alleged journalism school. And Tim wrote in, Tim from L.A., and said, I studied journalism in college. We did a story about the qualifications of a student body president. We received the official transcript from a school employee. After much hullabaloo and a court date for the professor and editor-in-chief, the court sided with us even though the Social Security number was visible. We did nothing wrong, the employee did, but we did not. And did you know that we're allowed to print names of rape victims and children of violent crime and under the age of 17? It's perfectly legal, but AP Style Handbook prohibits it, so we self-censor. That professor that I referred to in talking with Susan is an idiot. And if I had that professor's name in college he/she is from, I will tell the school's administrator to force that professor to retire. I really mean it. You got a name in university? I do not have a university. I have a name. I've never heard of this outfit before. Maybe some more journalistic types have. But this is the relevant portion of text from the CNN report about the publishing of concealed carry permit holders' names. In 2007, Roanoke.com, the website of the Roanoke Times, published a list of Virginians licensed to carry concealed weapons and then deleted it the next day. The paper explained that the list, originally published as part of an opinion column, was removed, quote, out of concern that it might include names that should not have been made public, unquote. Now, the translation of that is, we got a lot of hateful phone calls telling us they were going to come and blow our asses away. Now, that's not in the last part. That's not in the report. The Poynter Institute, Poynter Institute, a school for journalists, notes that some other news agencies have published various types of databases as well. Publishing gun owners' names makes them targets for theft or public ridicule. It is journalistic arrogance to abuse public record privilege, just as it is to air 911 calls for no reason or to publish the home addresses of police or judges without cause. Al Tompkins, a Poynter, Poynter, senior faculty member, said in a statement Wednesday, unwarranted publishing of the names of permitted owners just encourages gun owners to skip the permitting. So, in other words, these law-abiding gun owners who are forever telling us that they're law-abiding gun owners and, well, we can't be mistreating it, and they're not like them damn criminals, according to Pointer senior faculty member Al Tompkins. I think we would have called him doctor or professor if he was one, of the Pointer Institute, is basically arguing that these law-abiding gun owners will be law-abiding until they're not anymore. Let's see. Back to the mailbag. Susan, you got a big hoo-wee from Kate on the Front Range. She's informative and entertaining. Robert in Australia, writing in, he says, no government, no problem. Some years ago, New Zealand was without a government for about 3 months, and everything just kept running as normal. Unemployment payments here in Australia, the dole, never cuts out, provided you can demonstrate you're looking for work. God, it must be nice to have functioning government. Michael, with an observation, subject line, I don't call 911. Bob, the caller talking about things that actually do protect a person just reminded me of something. I always chuckle derisively at dumbasses with stickers on their pickups that say, I don't call 911, picture of handgun. What do they do when they get in a car wreck? Shoot the other driver, or more likely the telephone pole? If said crash has mangled their body, rendering them immobile, do they ride a magic carpet of bullets to the hospital? How about when their house catches fire? Put out the flames with a spray of bullets? When they go into cardiac arrest, as they someday surely will, do they shoot themselves in the chest? I mean, they don't call 911, so... question marks? I'm guessing they do call 911, says Michael. Dumbass lying sacks of crap. And Michael notes, not trying to evoke an image of the New York arsonist shooter. I've had this set of hypothetical questions in my head for years. If that comment seemed distasteful, it's just bad timing on my part. I didn't see anything as distasteful in there. I've seen that sign. I've seen it hanging in front of front doors in country homes that are really, no kidding, a 30-minute response time from any law enforcement on their best day. And that's the problem. The old thing they teach you, like the first day, right after you've had your first cup of coffee in law school, there's an old aphorism out there that says, hard cases make bad law. And I still maintain that even the in this incredibly violent culture we live in, there are different kinds of guns. But when you put it on your the rusted out bumper of your pick-em-up truck, yeah, it's a different story. Michael also noted, as far as the cliff, I'm not convinced the cliff is real. I suspect it's merely a Klavan. That's tonight's toaster. But if there is a cliff, Norquist and the House of Repiglickens have placed a bathtub at the base. Oh, Michael, you're working some territory. Remember, Grover wants to drown America in the bathtub. Andy writes in and says, tell Susan, changing to the chain CPI is not a little thing, not a small thing. It means billions of savings for the plutocracy. Also, if people haven't marched yet, when Bush and Cheney shredded the Constitution, tortured, cut taxes massively for the rich, and ran the credit card for war up to $12 trillion, then when will they protest? And so, yeah. And that's the question, you know, and that's the question I ask of the law-abiding gun owners. You're law-abiding, you're going to protect us from when the government decides to take our freedom? But you were right there on the couch ballyhooing the Patriot Act. You didn't even believe that domestic spying was happening, even though the evidence was right there in front of your little face. is... Jack in Shreveport responding. Says, as long as the cable stays on. Something that really got to me, and that really made me realize how pathetic this country is, was when I saw the blog entries that were posted during President Obama's speech about the Newtown Massacre. I never got around to that story. I'm glad you reminded me, Jack. That those blog entries were so blatantly racist is too obvious to declare, but it was how easy the racist, dumbass, ignorant pieces of crap put their demented thoughts out into the public that really made me want to throw up. Those pieces of crap were complaining about their football game being interrupted by the president's speech. I don't think they even realized that so many children had been killed. No, it's not that they didn't realize, Jack. They didn't care. Now, I've got that story right here. Maybe it bears going into. Deadspin is a pretty interesting sports site. Not the best name in the world, but it has a meaning outside anything we're discussing. Take that N-word off the TV. We want to watch football. Those were the tweets. That was one of the tweets that went through when President Barack Obama's address about the Newtown Massacre preempted Sunday Night Football on NBC. That was tweeted by Bradley Patterson, @2A_hog_of_the_year. Bradley Patterson, it turns out, one of those moments where I don't get any relief. Bradley Patterson was a walk-on football player at the University of North Alabama. He was from Red Bay, down Franklin County, Alabama. Take that N-word off the TV, we want to watch football. To their credit, the University of North Alabama immediately threw him off of their football team. But he wasn't the only one. No, it piled up right smart. There were lots and lots and lots of these tweets and Facebook posts. Obama, you stupid sand N-word, get off my TV. You're, Y-O-U-R, just making the families hurt and miss their kids more, and I want to watch football. That was from @Jard212. Then there's @Brandon_Ortiz13. Really? Can't even watch Sunday Night Football because our N-word prez has to talk? Really? Then there's @Bryant_James_, J-A-I-M-E-S. I don't want to see some nig making a speech. I want to watch the 49ers beat the Patriots. And then there's Brack Brack City. What the F is this N-word doing on my screen? ! I want football! Then there's @Japan_Vans. Woo, I don't know how to pronounce this, W-O-O-W, all caps. They took off Sunday Night Football to watch this N-word, Obama, talk about the shooting, N-I-G-G-A-I-D-G-A-F. Okay, I don't give a F. The Patriots, P-A-T-R-O-I-T-S, the Patriots playing. Hunter_Aaron said, Obama can eat shit. Trying to make a speech during the football game, unacceptable. Liz Michael, you thought the lady women folks were going to get off easy, didn't you? Liz Michael said, I'm sorry. cutting into the football game so that gun-grabbing N-word can make a political speech, major effing, and then some Facebook link. Nico Brown 6, you have got to be effing kidding me, Obama, you stupid MF-er. It's football time in America, not you to give a speech, you F-word. Yucky Yuck Baker, damn N-word takes up my football time, hashtag I want NFL. Alex Hernandez, this N-word interrupted football game. Q underscore Manhammer. Okay. F you, Obama, and your stupid speech interrupting NFL, hashtag I hate you, EYEHATEYOU. A.D. Tweetin, Alex DeMarco, F you, Obama, for broadcasting this shit now. You literally suck balls. F you, all caps, F you, and these, and when I say F, it's completely spelled out. F you, Obama, take me back to Sunday Night Football. And then there's, and then you know, there are some in this list that was raised right. Jake Pascarella says, no disrespect. No disrespect, but get the F off my TV, Obama, dot, dot, dot. You're interrupting Sunday Night Football. J023 is the most... Or the least offensive of this lot. Get Obama the hell off my screen, football on, all caps. At slow underscore burn, Bernie said, so Obama is going to interrupt my football? I want to see Tom Brady, not Barack, Michelle, and their fugly ass kids. And this list goes on and on and on and on. This is one of those stories that you bookmark. John Fox, score. Sounds like Idiocracy, says John Fox. Go away! I'm baiting! And then Ron and Raleigh taking care of the dry irony segment of the program. Hey, Bob, having grown up in the Jim Crow South, I find the new post-racial America refreshing. Oh, God, it may be post-racial, but it ain't post-stupid. And the funny thing is, and I know it's not that funny, but the funny thing is, the White House Communications Department had reached out to all the networks, including NBC, and said, listen, you know, we're going to be doing this thing. Would you mind cutting away? And NBC said, of course not. We'll be happy to. And then, at the beginning of the program, announced that they were going to be cutting away. And got the game going, yada, 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 yada. And then cut away. As we told you earlier, we're going to cut away now for the speech by the President of the United States of America. This is just sick. Just sick. It would be funny if it wasn't so damned real. And so damned indicative. of just how far gone this country is. And it really is kind of far gone, isn't it? We do not want our bread and circuses interrupted by reality. We do not wish to participate in any sort of public grief process. We do not wish to have our fantasy-laden realities imposed upon by the ultimate reality. And most of all, we don't want that one in our White House. Damn. One could despair. I try not to despair. Because I don't necessarily think that it's despair simply to acknowledge where one is. If one is in the swamp and despairs of ever getting out, one simply drowns or gets eaten by an alligator. If one is in the swamp, however, and acknowledges being in said swamp as a means of beginning to devise a strategy for self-extraction or getting extracted by someone else, then that's not despair. Acknowledgement is not despair. But we have a significant portion of our country, of citizens of our country, who want to think about any, who are in the swamp up to their necks, but want to pretend that they're just watching football, or pretend that the price is, you know, as long as the price is right, is running on a monitor above them out of the wet, okay, I bet the prize package is worth $22,769. But it's not despair for those of us who live in reality land to at least acknowledge we're in the handbasket and try to get off the road we're on. By the way, news broke during the course of the program. Norman Schwarzkopf is dead. Shorty writes, "Alert. Okay, thank you for dying, Norman Schwarzkopf. You left something behind, though. You left behind my PTSD from burying all those Iraqis in the sand. Thanks for those unlawful orders. You forgot to tell Congress at the hearings that many of them were still alive, too. Bastard. Have you ever tried to dig in the sand? You cannot. It is a losing battle." A lot of lies told about that heroic moment, those heroic... Remember how General Stormin Norman told us, showed us the smart bomb footage? Remember how he showed it? And this right here, ho, 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 yuck, 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 as if he was some sort of jubilation tea corn pone, and maybe he was. Here's the luckiest man in the Iraq. Remember that grainy black and white footage of a car crossing a bridge that we were going to destroy? Yeah. Philip writing in. Subject line, football. Clearly, football causes severe head injuries, marked impairment of rational thought and actions, and regressive dementia. I wonder if it affects the players as well. Oh, that was a witty one. But all too true. Well, let's see here. Try to keep track of the accurate time because for some reason or another, this tired old computer loses about 3 minutes a show. Yeah, about 5 or so minutes of good conversation left in the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
That's because you're burning it up.
Smoking. What's happening, Jim?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Like I sent you an email before, the three boxes, the jury box, ballot box, and the cartridge box. Good luck.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of people who just want to jump past choices one and two and get busy with choice three.
Mm-hmm. You said that General Schwarzkopf passed away?
Yes.
Well, there it is. There you have it.
Yep.
All paths of glory lead but to the grave. But there's one band who passed away Christmas Eve that I would like to honor, who was a great actor on television.
Charles Durning?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Jack had written in about that, about him as well, and I'm glad you mentioned him.
And he was there. First wave that went in to, I think, Omaha Beach.
Yep.
And shot the adversary. And couldn't have been more than 15, but nonetheless, it showed a great deal of how things were.
Well, he was the only one of his unit who survived. The rest of them were mown down in a machine gun, by a machine gun nest.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he got beyond the beach, he was attacked by a young German soldier whom he said, you're right, couldn't have been more than 15. And he struggled and struggled and struggled. He got stabbed 7 times. By a bayonet, because that's all the boy had.
Yeah.
And the only way he could get him to stop was to smash his head in with a rock.
Well, that's war, and that's the way the invasion was, for real.
Yep.
And I've always liked Charles Durning. I thought he played some incredible roles.
Well, you know, he did a brilliant job reviving Big Daddy on Broadway in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just received the most curious phone call.
Yes?
And this guy called me by name and said, when are you going to come pick up your recliner?
I'm guessing you haven't purchased a recliner?
Uh-uh. No. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't have one in my house. I mean, they're fine for other people, whether it's motorized or whatever. But I said, I'm sorry. And he said, well, what do you want? Do you want the recliner or do you want the cash? And I said, well, cash is always handy. He said, well, I gave him my address. And he said, we'll send you out a check for $2,000.
Oh, dear.
I can just imagine what kind of thing that's going to be.
Well, I can. I kind of wish you hadn't given out the address.
Oh, I don't care. I don't care. I mean, you know, what are they going to do? Come over and recline me?
It's West Virginia, Jim.
They're going to recline me? Well, I mean, I'm already reclining. I mean, you know, fuck. I mean, excuse me, but I mean, what the hell? Oh, Lord have mercy. I don't know. It's just been a crazy night, hasn't it?
Well, it has been, and it's been a crazy few days. And, you know, I started the program with a series of stories just as a little thought exercise in trying to envision the country that this is, that certain of our betters, Jim, are convinced isn't austere enough. And it absolutely boggles my mind.
Well, they're talking about a number of measures now, besides just suspending unemployment checks. They're talking about reducing payments for Medicare, 30% to physicians?
Well, they've put a lot of stuff out there, but they've described it in terms of a cliff. And it's not. All of this does not happen at once. It's like they seized upon the idea of the fiscal cliff somewhere along the way after reading about the Mayan prophecy of doom or whatever, you know, because it all happens at once.
Well, you know, that's the way to get the camel's nose under the tent.
Sure.
And that's what they do, and that's how they, you know, they work. I mean, it's real odd because I'm a Social Security recipient, and I've already received my COLA for next year. In writing. I wonder what they're going to do about that.
I'm guessing nothing.
Haven't heard from OPM yet. See if there's any COLA there. Probably won't be. But, I mean, you know, for federal employees.
Well, right, because the 9 most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, right?
Well.
Ronald Reagan. You know, somebody should put that on his tombstone and then urinate on it frequently.
Well, remember last night we were talking about moonshiners?
Yeah.
There was one guy named Popcorn Sutton, and this guy was kind of up there, and he was caught with all his accoutrements and shot himself, killed himself. And on his tombstone is his name, and then the legend or epitaph, F.U.
Nice.
Yeah, well.
I know of another man who had himself cremated, and his epitaph says he made an ash of himself.
Now, I've seen this one, and it says, here lies so-and-so, as usual. I'm not kidding. That's in Charleston, South Carolina.
As usual.
That's it, buddy.
Agnes keeps telling me that hers is going to say, I told you I was sick.
Well, I'm not...
I forget who it was that said, whose epitaph says, you'll pardon me if I don't get up.
Oh, yeah. There are a number of parting shots that people can take, I guess, in that direction. But anyway, it's time for you to get out of here.
It is, at that. Jim, take care. Have a good night.
Same to you.
All right, bye now. You want the recliner? Nobody ever calls and asks me if I want the recliner or the check. It's our buddy Jim. Andy writes in at the close, concerning the National Rifle Association's Wayne LaPierre, a thought. He talks about the Second Amendment rights of gun owners. What about the rights of children? This group takes away their right to live, let alone their pursuit of happiness. Looking at the bigger context, do the children and gun victims of this country have any constitutional rights? Not much. Philip, finishing things off, thanks for informing us of the passing of Norman Schwarzkopf, the man who converted modern warfare into a video game that surpassed Donkey Kong in popularity. Charles Durning understood and articulated the horror of war and was a very fine actor. On the other hand, all I've learned from Schwarzkopf was that the Army apparently does not require its generals to participate in exercise and fitness regimens. Well said, Philip. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Didn't do anything at all in terms of reaching tonight's fundraising goal, but hey, there's always tomorrow. Somebody cue up the Annie soundtrack. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, Betsy in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, my lovely wife, Agnes, John Fox, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Here comes Rick Smith.